May the peace of Christ be with you. This is Molly Vetter, Senior Pastor of the Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles. Welcome to our Sanctuary Gathering podcast. Here we share the sermon preached on Sunday as a part of our Sanctuary Gathering. We hope that in these words you will be drawn closer to God and made more ready to love your neighbor. As a congregation, we embrace the words of the Hebrew prophet that are etched into the stairs that lead to our building, the calling to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. We also believe that we're a richer congregation for the diversity of people who participate in our community, and we celebrate the diversity of age, race, gender identity, and sexual orientation that participate in our church. You are welcome in this place, and we hope you will participate. We invite you to do your own theology, to wrestle with questions of faith as we seek out what it means to be faithful Christians today. You're welcome to join us not only by listening in to this podcast, but we also invite you to join in our congregational life. Every Sunday, you're welcome to join us for worship at 9:30 a.m. You can join us in our beautiful sanctuary in Los Angeles at the corner of Warner and Wilshire, or online via our church Facebook page. All are welcome in our midst, and we thank you for being a part of our church. May these moments be a blessing to you today.
The reading this morning is Psalm 30. I will extol you, O Lord, for you have lifted me up and did not let my foes rejoice over me. O Lord, my God, I cried to you for help, and you healed me. O Lord, you brought up my soul from Sheol, restored me to life from among these those gone down to the pit. Sing praises to the Lord, O his faithful ones, and give thanks to his holy name. Surely the Lord's anger is but for a moment. The Lord's favor is for a lifetime. Weeping may tarry for the night, but joy comes with the morning. As for me, I said in my prosperity, I shall never be moved. But your favor, O Lord, you had established me as a strong mountain. You hid your face. I was dismayed. To you, O Lord, I cried, and to the Lord I made supplication. What profit is there in my death if I go down to the pit? Will the dust praise you? Will it tell of your faithfulness? Hear, O Lord, and be gracious to me. O Lord, be my helper. You have turned my mourning into dancing. You have loosed my sackcloth and girded me with gladness, that my soul may praise you and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give thanks to you forever. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Our gospel reading today is from the book of Mark, chapter 5, beginning with the 21st verse. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue named Jairus came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him, and a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had, and she was no better, but rather worse. She had heard about Jesus, came up behind him in the crowd, and touched his cloak. For she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately, her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you? How can you say who touched me?" He looked all around to see who had done it, but the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside, and he took the child's father and mother and those who were with him, and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk about. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know of this and told them to give her something to eat. This is the word of God for the people of God. Have you ever heard a little kid tell a story? I've heard many of them. My nephew, when he was about 6 years old, was enrolled in T-ball. He wasn't very good, and he didn't actually end up going far in his career, but he was, you know, solid at the time, we thought. And after a game, I would ask him, "How did it go?" And he would say, "Oh, Uncle Kevin, it went great. I got a hit." Or then he would say, "They had orange slices. They had Gatorade, it was wonderful." And as he would tell me a story about what would happen during a game, he would say, "I was at bat, and I was swinging, and I hit the ball, and I was running, and there was a truck over here, and the truck was big, it was a big garbage truck." And I'm like, "Wait, there's a truck in there?" And the garbage truck was going down the road, and it was so loud that I couldn't hear people cheering, and I got to first base, and everyone was laughing and cheering me on and clapping, and I looked over at my mom and my dad was on his phone, and I wondered why my dad was on his phone, but then I realized that he was checking the sports of another team, and it was okay, and I'm just lost by the end. I'm like, so there's a truck, and your dad's on his phone, and there was another game that he was trying to get the score of. I don't know what's happening here. That's beautiful, the way that he tells a story. And before you think, "Oh my gosh, I'm confused," wait till you read the book of Mark. Mark tells stories the exact same way as my nephew. He'll start a train of thought, and then right as you think that he is about to make a point, he stops and he veers left. And he says, "Actually, we want to talk about this." And you're like, "Okay, mind on this." And then boom, he's over here on the right. And he's telling another story entirely. If you were to read today's passage as we just did, and you were to read the chapters all around it, you would have every reason to believe that this was a story about Jesus healing people's physical ailments, about Jesus having power over the human body. You see, in Mark chapter 4, Jesus calms a very stormy sea. He says, "Peace, be still," and everything goes to this wonderful, serene moment. And then at the beginning of Mark chapter 5, Jesus heals a man who had been tormented by an evil spirit. And so you see, Mark is starting to set up everything very nicely. Jesus has power over nature. Jesus has power over the spiritual realm. And so it makes sense that this would be a story about Jesus having power over the human body, nature, spiritual, physical. And you would have every reason to think that, because the story starts off with Mark telling the story about Jesus as he is walking along the sea, having just demonstrated mastery over the physical, over the nature realm, over the spiritual realm. He gets approached by Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, someone who is accustomed and no stranger to power, prestige, prominence. Jairus is the leader of the synagogue, and in this role, he is the big person in charge. He is responsible for managing the worshiping community of that area, having been elected by his peers and sought after because of what would be his wisdom, his commitment, and his devotion. And in this role as synagogue leader, Jairus would have been well respected. Everyone would have known him in town. He would get the best tables at all the restaurants. People would move out of the way when he would walk by, that sort of thing. And he comes up to Jesus and he prostrates himself and says, "I need you to help me. My daughter is on the verge of death. And if you don't come and help me, nothing will save her. Please, please come and help." Jesus hears his pleas and says, "Sure, I'll go." Pause for just a moment. Again, at this point of the story, you would have every reason to believe that this is a story about physical bodily healing, about Jesus' power and command over bodies. You would have every reason to believe that. Mark has set things up in such a way that you're like, "I know where you're going. I know what the punchline is going to be. Let's get there." You would think to yourself, this is just like when Jesus heals the servant of the centurion in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke, where a powerful person comes to Jesus, says, "I have someone who is sick in my family. I need you to heal them." Jesus goes and does it. Or in the Gospel of John, where a royal official comes up to Jesus and says, "I need you to heal my child." Jesus goes and does it. Yes, Mark, we've heard this story before. We know exactly what happens at this moment. Go ahead and get us to the point where Jesus goes and heals Jairus' daughter so we can get on with it. Mark says, "Sure. But first, there was a woman." And we're like, "What? Where did this woman come from? Who's writing this story?" Mark says, "Yes, there was a woman. A woman who came up to Jesus and felt powerless. Powerless. She had a hemorrhaging problem. And as part of her hemorrhaging problem, like many of us who have a physical ailment, she went to a doctor. And not just one doctor, but she got a second opinion. And because that second opinion wasn't right, she went to a third opinion. It's like when you go to Cedars and then you go to UCLA and you're still not happy with that. And so you keep going down the line until you find a hospital system with a doctor that you like. She had done that and she was wiped out. No more money. No more insurance. She is on her own. And in this moment, she thinks to herself, "I have but one thing I can do. And that is go to this person that I have heard wonderful things about. And if I can just touch his garment, that'll be enough." Can you imagine that? Feeling so powerless to think that all I can do now is touch this guy's garment and hope that that heals me. What a state of powerless to be in. When was the last time that you felt powerless? Think about it. When was the last time that you felt powerless? It's a hard question. It's not one that we like to think about a lot, because in our day and age, we like to think of ourselves as people of having autonomy, power, control. And when we don't have power, authority, and control, we can feel anxious. We can feel depressed. We can feel out of control, like everything in our life is awry and askew. But Mark wants us to sit here. When's the last time that you felt powerless? I don't know about you, but for me, it's every day. Every day when I drive to Los Angeles and I see our neighbors without homes on the street, tents multiplying, and I think to myself, how are we ever going to help our neighbors? How are we ever going to show up for them in a way that is just, that is kind, that is merciful? I think about it sometimes in my own job as Chief of Staff at Point Foundation. We're supporting 755 scholars this year, and that sounds like a lot, but the reality is that we get over 10,000 applications, which means that we're not even scratching the surface. over 10,000 young LGBTQ individuals studying everything from art to science, medicine to construction and architecture, asking for help to afford their education. And we can only do so much. And sometimes it makes me feel powerless. Have you ever gone to the doctor's office? Something's bothering you. You're thinking, I want to get this figured out. I want to get this part of me feeling better. I want to get this aspect of my body healed. And despite whatever you do, nothing seems to work. You've already tried that medication and that medication and that medication. You've been to physical therapy. You've gone to the specialist, and yet still it persists. You can feel powerless. And so this woman does the only thing that she has left. It is the ultimate Hail Mary. She finds her way in the midst of a crowd of people crowding around Jesus and pushes herself through to touch the hem of his garment. And she finds herself healed. Now, the interesting thing about this story is we never learned this woman's name. Jesus even says, "Who is it that touched me?" The disciples look at him as if he's gone bonkers, as if he's lost all of his marbles. They say, "Jesus, you are surrounded by scads of people. Everyone's touching you." And he says, No. I felt power come out of me. Who did it? The woman approaches with fear and trembling. She is scared, Mark tells us. And yet Jesus says, "Your faith has healed you. Go in peace." We never learn this woman's name. We know who Jairus is. He's the leader of the synagogue. He's the person in power. He's the individual that you would expect would be the star of the story right alongside Jesus. Jesus and Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, the prophet, they come together, good things happen. That's the story that we would expect. That's the story that you sell to the script writers. But instead, we are left here with Mark, saying, "But there's this woman. We don't even know her name. She's anonymous. All we know is that she has this deep, desperate feeling of powerlessness, and she approaches Jesus. A woman who, by Jewish law, would not have even been allowed to be out and about, who would have been considered a social outcast, a pariah, because of her hemorrhaging problem. A woman whom history now has forgotten a name, has forgotten an identity, who can't even tell us what happened to her afterwards. A woman who plenty of people in the crowd probably tried to push away, to shoo away, to say, this isn't for you." Last year, I was at home, and my partner, fiance, had gone off to the Emmys. He works on a show, and he's very good at his job, but I know very little about what he does, which is common among relationships and finding. And he works on the show RuPaul's Drag Race. Some of you may have never heard of it before. It's one of the funniest shows you could ever watch. I personally love it, but I love it even more because it helps pay the bills in our household. And he had gone to the show, and being a good partner, I should have actually watched the Emmys. I did not. And worse than that, I was playing a video game, nothing related to the Emmys, and he had gotten all dressed up, and I had said, "Hey, you look great, you're gonna do great, good luck. I have no idea what's gonna happen, this is just not my world." I told him, "I'm gonna go play some video games. Have fun." So he goes off, and then all of a sudden, later on in that evening, I get a text, and he says, "We won!" Exclamation point. And I'm like, "Oh crap, so I run to the television, I turn it on, I wanna see what's happening, and I don't have the subscription to the network that's showing this. And so then I get on my phone, and I'm like trying to find out what's going on, and I find on social media a video, a live stream
thank God I'm saved. And right as I'm doing that and I log on, RuPaul is about to start his acceptance speech for winning the Emmy for Outstanding Reality Series. And he says something that I think is absolutely brilliant. He says, if someone is trying to restrict your access to power, they're trying to scare you. Say that again. If someone is trying to restrict your access to power, they're trying to scare you. They're trying to scare you. This is what the woman felt. How many people, how many physicians had said, you know what, there's really nothing that we can do. Just go home, seclude yourself away, shut yourself in. We can't do anything, you can't do anything. We know that by the Jewish law, she would not have been allowed to do most things in society. Society would have said, just go over there, be by yourself, suffer in silence, and leave the rest of us alone. Restrict her access to power. Trying to scare. The great activist, poet, genius, Audre Lorde once said, when I feel powerful and use my strength in service of my vision, it becomes less and less important whether or not I am afraid. Or, as Catherine of Siena put it, start being brave about everything. The United Methodist Church, earlier this year, at their general conference, finally removed restrictive and harmful, hurtful language from the Book of Discipline, allowing LGBTQ individuals to finally be recognized, ordained in the church, finally be accepted as members. And of course, here at Westwood, that absolutely. Here at Westwood, that has not been an issue. We've said we think the Book of Discipline is wrong. Words and books can be wrong. We've learned this. We're going to follow what we believe to be God's call on this congregation and on the church to be an inclusive place. We are not going to restrict people's power. We are not trying to control their access to power. We aren't going to allow LGBTQ people to use their power in service of God's vision. There is no reason to be afraid. You all were brave about something very, very important. But unfortunately, that was not true across every congregation. That was not true across every conference. You see, the reality is that while I love the fact that churches like Westwood have rainbows plastered all over the place, we have to do that. We have to do that because most people don't assume or presume that churches that look like this are welcoming places for people who are like me, who are like many people here in the congregation, who are like your neighbors. And so those signs and symbols become important markers of the work that we believe God is doing here among us. But in many places, in many churches across the United Methodist Church, LGBTQ people had to be very closeted. They had to hide themselves. They had to shroud themselves in secrecy. Much like the woman, they had to suffer in silence looking for relief, finding it nowhere in sight, finding their access to power restricted. After the General Conference passed the legislation removing the harmful language, removing the restrictions, where many LGBTQ people like me, currently ordained, serving in ministry, were on these gigantic text chains talking about what's going on. And one person brought this up. They said they were in their congregation and someone came up to them and said, I'm so happy that this happened. You can finally be ordained. You can finally be free to do the ministry that you were called to do. And this LGBTQ person kindly responded to that person who meant well and simply said, honey, I'm already ordained. I was already free to do the ministry that God had called me to do. Here's the good news in the gospel today. This is not a story about Jesus having power over bodies. It doesn't go, Jesus has power over nature, Jesus has power over the spiritual, Jesus has power over bodies. It goes, Jesus has power over nature, Jesus has power over the spiritual realm, Jesus has power over our power structures. And where we would seek to restrict and refuse, where we would seek to block, Jesus says the door is open. Come, everyone, approach. Whether you are weaving your way through a crowd just to grab the hem of a garment, or whether you are Jairus, it doesn't matter. In Jesus' eyes, both are at the same level. It doesn't matter that Jairus is leader of the synagogue. It doesn't matter that this woman's name is one that we do not even know. They are both beloved, treasured child of God. They are both people worthy of the love of our Creator. They are both people that God has said, I have a purpose, I have a plan, and you both are a part of it. Look into those moments of your lives where you feel powerless. Look into those moments of your lives where you say, there is nothing that I can do. And hear the voice of our beloved Creator, the voice of love itself saying, you are the answer. You are welcome. Take charge. Take your voice. Pick it up. Be the person in that moment. I was having a conversation with one of my fellow clergy friends who I've had the privilege of serving with before in another church. She's one of the most brilliant individuals that I've ever met. And I was talking to her about a medical issue that I was having, trying to get some migraines sorted out and how I was having trouble with different doctors. And she was listening to my story, listening to me complain, listening to me not really get anywhere. And she said, Kevin, one second. She said, Kevin, as a black female, I am used to doctors not listening to me all the time. And so I have learned in those moments that I have to tell the doctor, please stop and listen. This is what is going on in my life. This is what I want fixed and helped with. Can you help me or not? And if they say no, or if they look confused, I go and find another doctor. She said, I have found that that is the only way to make it through. What wonderful advice. She refused to be powerless. She refused to accept the fact that people were restricting her access. And she said instead, I believe that I'm a beloved child of God. And I am worth care. I am worth finding healing. I am worth being able to access the things that matter most to me. And so I ask you today, what are those areas of your life where God is asking you to be a little bit more powerful? To let your voice be heard a little bit more. To see the actions in your life increase so that it has an impact on those around you in your community. Jesus is passing through. Reach out. Grab his garment. That's what he wants you. Thanks be to God.